Welcome to Theology Simply Profound, a podcast of Reformed Forum. This is episode 152.
I've always found it odd that Christians are surprised when the world mocks us. Jesus said they would, and that we'd be persecuted too, just like he was. So we shouldn't be surprised. Aren't we also pilgrims wandering in a strange land? Today, as we talk through one of the most famous scenes from the book, take notice of the truth that is against faithful. He and Christian do cause uproar in the city. They are saying things against the lives and worldview of those who live there. As soon as we preach the gospel, we are messing with the comfort of all who hear. But aren't we innocent? It is not our message that we teach, nor are we judging according to our authority. In one sense, we are just the messengers, but history has shown that oftentimes the messengers get shot. Look at Stephen, a peril to faithful. What had he done other than teach what is true? And in the end, he was stoned. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be careful and wise. There are times when we declare ourselves openly, and other times when we need to meet in silence, secretly in the woods. What we have to remember, just as Paul said, to die is gain, because we will be with our Lord. So did faithful deserve to die? Should we say nothing when we are treated with injustice? How did Christian escape? We will discuss these and other questions today on Theology Simply Profound.
Welcome back to another episode of Theology Simply Profound. My name is Bob Trullo. I serve as pastor here at Westminster Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Indian Head Park, Illinois. And with me, as always, is Rob McKenzie. Rob's an elder here at Westminster, and he's also an MDiv student at Reform Theological Seminary in Orlando. Hey, Rob.
Hi, Bob.
Sit up straight there, son.
Yeah, sorry. I was leaning back in my chair a little too far.
Yeah. Closer. It would have sounded like, hey, Bob. Yeah. What's that sound like? That sounds a little weird, huh?
It does sound a bit weird. I don't know. Yeah, no.
All right, good. Back for another episode on Pilgrim's Progress.
Starting to get a little bit excited that we're no longer in the teens or the 20s, that we're actually like in the 40s.
What are you talking about?
The weather.
Oh, I'm, yeah. I don't remember these as the sections of Pilgrim's Progress.
You remember that? No. Yeah.
So you're talking the weather
I
now.
I am talking the weather.
All right.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, it's sunny
happy.
Out, too. Well, that's even better, is that
yes.
There's I can see the
yeah.
sun is shining through right. the basement window, which is really nice.
Yeah. It's just get tired of the cold. We've had a cold winter.
We've had a cold and cloudy winter.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And anytime the sun was out, it felt really nice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've seen shoots of little things coming up out of the ground.
Yeah.
I don't know my plants
actually,
well enough.
Melody's excited. Her tulips are coming up.
The tulips have started. Yeah. yeah. It might have been tulips that I saw starting to shoot
okay.
up.
They're probably. I think they're the first.
They're one of the first. Yeah. I mean, daffodils come around May, I think, the end of
okay.
May or so. I'm looking forward to that. Going to the Morton Arboretum and enjoying that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I only know because Melody said, oh, look, my tulips are coming up. Okay.
You don't look to the ground. You don't
no.
look at anything. You just, you
no.
know, walk with blinders on.
Absolutely. I just want to get in the house. I just want some tea. That's all I want.
Give you some tea. You don't even drink coffee, do you?
No, I don't.
So, all right, folks. He said it on air.
Really? I'm sure I've said that before.
He is a freak of nature.
As I said, you know, Adam and Eve left the garden.
And they left the coffee behind?
Well, no. They left the garden and somebody said, here, have a cup of coffee. What happened?
That's what happened.
Yeah.
True story.
True story. And well, here we are talking about lovely things, and
of these things you'll find
coffee.
At Vanity
and
Vanity Fair, right?
That's right. All coffee is vanity.
What a segue! Right,
yeah,
professionals
go.
At work here. Well, here
and now we're going to talk about one of the funniest scenes actually in the book is the death of faithful.
Oh, way to go, Rob.
I know. You like
My
that?
Goodness.
I'm sorry. It's
People
true.
Being persecuted all over the earth right now. True. And you're That's saying true. The I'm funniest saying, scene is the I'm persecution saying, and wow, death of faithful.
You just went to a very bad place. I did not say that. Not in any way taking us to the persecution of actual people in
no,
the world.
No, no, no. I know you're not.
But
of
one
course.
Of the funniest scenes in this book is truly the yeah. trial and death of faithful.
Yes,
yeah.
it's not so much, I think, that not so much his actual killing
no, actual
and murder, let's just say, and his death. But those things mm. leading up to it.
Yeah.
And the characters that Bunyan employs for this whole debacle
yeah.
is Yes, I'd agree.
Okay.
There is great humor in it.
Well, and it's you know, so Christian and Faithful, they enter in to Vanity Fair with the warning that, or the prophecy from Evangelist.
Yeah, that's right.
One or both of you mm-hmm. are going to go here and die. So they're already walking into a place that they know at least one of them's not making it through. And, you know, how do you enter into a place knowing that you're going to die? It's just, and people throughout history, Christians, we can, you know, we're talking about Christians, have had to go through trials where they knew in the end that they might die. And there's a great book about Lady Jane Grey called The Eight Day Queen, I believe. And I didn't have that in front of me, so hopefully I'm not butchering the title. But it's just an excellent, excellent book. And the story of Lady Jane Grey is phenomenal, and her testimony is one that everyone should just read her story.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if, you know, parents, if you have teenage girls, give them this book, because she is a great example to how young women not only need to be brave in the face of persecution, but also her commitment to Scripture and the Reformed faith is incredible. And we should expect more of our kids, maybe. she was an incredible person. Sure, she, you know, I don't want to take anything away from her, but
yeah, yeah.
Her testimony mm-hmm. for theology and her love for Christ and God was just incredible.
Yeah.
But when she came to her actual death, the actual day of execution, the actual time, I mean, she broke down,
mm-hmm.
you know, in fear. Here's she didn't waver. She never wavered in her testimony. But still, death might have lost its sting, but it's still an enemy.
It's still an enemy, and it's still one of those unknowns that you, yeah. you know, there's a sense that you do fear that unknown to yeah. a certain respect. Yeah, I think there's even, I don't remember the title of it, but Simonetta Carr has a children's book on okay. Lady Jane Grey as well.
Okay.
There's a series that Simonetta Carr has put out through, I think it's Reformation Heritage
okay.
publishers on key figures and historical figures that mm-hmm. for the Reformed faith. And I think there's one out on her.
The one I'm thinking of is written by Faith Cook.
Okay,
and it's written more as a biography, not mm-hmm. necessarily for kids.
But. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Christian Faithful, yeah. and they're coming mm-hmm. in, and they know that they might die,
mm-hmm.
so they've got that on their mind as they're coming through. But it still doesn't make it easier to actually eventually face the actual death.
No, certainly not. And I wouldn't think it would make it easier as they are facing the persecution and the sufferings or the mocking and the ridicule mm-hmm. As they're going through it as well. I mean, you'd think that there would be a sense of backing off or a sense of, well, let's just be nice and quiet and make our way through here. And
yeah, which is what I think they were trying to do. Yeah. As we were told, as they're walking by all mm-hmm. the tables, they're averting their eyes. They're mm-hmm. not looking. They just want to get through.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because this road is built, or the fair is built on the road that pilgrims go through to get to the celestial city. That means that all the pilgrims are coming through here. Just looking at this from a literary point of view. Mm-hmm. The pilgrims, they come through. This should be something that the people of Vanity Fair expect. They expect these people to come through, right?
Right, yeah. Just let the weirdos go by, right?
Yeah, right, right. This should be a commonplace occurrence
yeah.
in the town. Oh, there's some more pilgrims that are mm-hmm. going to go through. But no, Bunyan has it set up so when they come in, people are, you know, it's where they walk into the room and everybody stops and stares at them. Yeah. That's what's happening
right,
here.
Right, right.
As they're walking by, they're looking at them just, you don't fit in. And they're looking at their clothes. Mm-hmm. Their clothes are different. Their mannerism are different. Their speech is different. Everything about them is different. And it just doesn't fit. And not just, oh, that, you know, that doesn't fit in.
Yeah.
You know? It's offensively different.
Right. They Bunyan describes it in three reasons for what he calls the hubbub that they are causing.
Yes.
And it says all the people in the fair were moved, and the town itself, right, not just the fair now, the town itself, as it were in a hubbub about them. And that for several reasons. And the first is the pilgrims were clothed with such a kind of raiment as was diverse from the raiment of any that traded in that fair. The people, therefore, of the fair made a great gazing upon them. Some said they were fools, some they were bedlams, and some they are outlandish men, right? So just their clothing spoke to them of being different.
Yeah.
Secondly, and as they wondered at their apparel, so they did likewise at their speech. So their speech. Mm. Thirdly, but that which did not a little amuse the merchandisers was that these pilgrims set very light by all their wares. They cared not so much as to look upon them. And if they called upon them to buy, they would put their fingers in their ears and cry, "Turn away my eyes from beholding vanity," and look upwards, signifying that their trade and traffic was in heaven.
Yeah, I mean, look, these merchants spent a lot of money in a marketing firm to try to get just the right sales pitch. And here these guys are walking by and they're not even listening. That's annoying. That's annoying.
That would be annoying. I mean, you'd want to get your money back, right? But
absolutely. Yeah.
But no, you think of controversy that Paul and his missionary journeys had done in
Ephesus,
in converting with the demon possessed woman that the merchandisers were using for their financial gain, and then they wanting them to drive out, right? Yeah. I think it was the silversmiths wanting to drive them out of the town and have them hurt because they were hurting business, right? They were hurting business.
Yeah, it's quite the stark. Last episode we were talking about how Bunyan, how he created such a really interesting fair. You know, with all this activity and you know, sensory overload is going on. So here's Christian and faithful walking through there, and they're just averting their eyes. They're not. They don't want to listen to it. They don't want to see it. And yet they're causing the hubbub.
Right, right.
There's chaos. There's chaos all around them.
Yeah.
And yet they're causing the hubbub.
Right, right. And yeah. So you see, I mean. The issue with Paul that we just mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. There's an activity that Paul does, right? I mean, and right. It's to put away that yeah. Here, that's not even happening. You just have what appears to be, in the description, of course, is two men simply walking through, and when they see something that they don't want to see or hear something that they don't want to hear, they are attempting to ignore it. And they put their heads heavenward and avert their eyes upward to show that their life and their wares are in heaven. Mm-hmm. It's not as though there's even an activity on their part that is trying to stop people from doing from their doing. Mm-hmm. And they're not, doesn't even seem to be that they're proclaiming the gospel, or doing anything in that regard to cause a hubbub. It is simply their presence.
Yeah. What causes the real offense.
Yeah.
That gets everybody
their
in the
difference,
hubbub.
Their dress, their speech, and their unwillingness to go about the business of the fair, the merchandising, the buying. It's, you know, like we were talking about last episode, talking about going to the carnival. It'd be like, you know, walking through the carnival and not buying anything. And then the people starting getting upset with you. Well, if you're in here, you better buy something, mm-hmm. right? You know, there's no reason for you to be here otherwise. And if you are here, you're offending me. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially what you have going on here. You know, we might think of it in modern terms where there are some religious sects that wear strange clothes to us.
Sure.
And they don't buy certain things, you know, maybe it's electricity or things that are made with electrical.
No, absolutely.
And they seem odd to many.
Buttons. They won't wear buttons.
They don't wear buttons.
Amish don't wear buttons.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That wear zippers? I'm teasing now. Sorry. I just don't know.
Yeah, they have clasps. I think that's
clasps. Okay. And so you're trying to, you know, you try to get a sense of what, you know, is going on here, just to get an image in your mind of the scenario going on here. And I think that's appropriate. It's what we're meant to do. Mm-hmm. And try to bring some of it into our modern context to understand. But I think it's Christians living in the world.
Well, is this why we're supposed to wear fish t-shirts?
Huh?
Just, you know, fish, not the band.
Yeah, you threw me with that. I was like, the band?
You know, the fish, the fish symbol.
The little thing. Fish symbol. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we should all have, just have fish symbol t-shirts.
I thought it was enough to have it in the back of my car.
No, that's good.
Yeah, swallowing up one with legs.
Is that is that the sticker next to the other one that says, this vehicle will be unmanned in case of rapture?
I haven't seen that one.
Well, that's because I put it on there when you weren't looking.
No, I'm sorry. No, yeah, religious wear.
Yeah,
is what you're thinking,
right?
Of,
yeah,
right?
Something, yeah. That this, you know, that we, you know, people, you wear a cross around your neck, and you mm-hmm. do that. I don't know. This is there's a radio station that sometimes I listen to with radio personalities, but they were talking with WLS is what they mm-hmm. were talking about, and. At one point, they were talking about how there was this uprising in Africa, and you know, young boys on the back of trucks with machine guns after they, you know, the military action within a village, and all mm-hmm. these people are slaughtered. And here they're wearing WLS t-shirts because at one point they had this overstock of t-shirts and they just shipped it. And so here they are standing there with WLS. And so, you know, you every now and then you see on the news somebody, you know, who's done some sort of crime and is being led mm-hmm. away, and they've got, you know, this fish t-shirt or something like that. Or a cross around their neck. And it's, mm-hmm. it's like, whoa, look at those Christians.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, your clothing don't necessarily identify exactly. who you are nowadays.
Exactly.
But there was a time, as you said last episode, that you know, people did dress differently. And here you can see that, I mean, we mentioned last time that it's likely that the dress in Vanity Fair is a immodest dress mm-hmm. in some fashion that he's trying to describe for us. And so you have a modest and simple dress is apparel for the pilgrims. And
right. Well, of course, Christian and Faith were given clothing at the beginning
mm-hmm. yeah.
when they became Christians. Mm-hmm. It was, so there is this is, we are clothed in the righteousness of Christ. Mm-hmm. And so this is again with going, looking at this as allegory.
Right.
You know, that we see that they're clothed in the righteousness of Christ. That's probably what he's trying to do. But they also, of course, Christian has the armor on. And Faithful does as well. I can't remember if Faithful actually has the armor. He might, maybe we're never told. But so they're clothed in the righteousness of Christ, so these clothes that they're given when they're Christians. And of course, Christian at least has the armor. Mm-hmm. So there is, they are standing up, but they're standing up because, you know, in an allegorical way, their dress is offending
sure.
the people.
That sounds better than what I said.
It's our Christian.
It does.
Well, we're
really.
Having a little fun with it as well. Does, yeah, we're having fun with it.
But does sound good.
But that's what, you know, it's Vanity Fair. I mean, it's again, this is the... This is more interior of people's passion, what they're driven to, what they're mm-hmm. living their life for,
yeah.
lands and husbands and wives and children and apes and all these other things that they've good things mm-hmm. that they've turning into their life pursuit, which is all empty, it's all vanity, and so Christian and Faithful come in, and who are they? They're the people who are actually living their lives for Christ, in the clothed and in the righteousness of Christ. They're actually caring more about serving the king than they are about serving themselves. And this is what, in the end, what really offends them. And so for those of us who are Christians in this world, we shouldn't be surprised when the world is just offended at who we are. We might not have done anything mm-hmm. to actually offend them, but just the fact that, you know, I've worked jobs before where somebody would say, you know, I've noticed you don't swear, and I'll be, you know, well, yeah, you know, well, why don't you swear? And you know, it's you know, it's a little embarrassing, mm-hmm. you know, and then sometimes people are like, well, you know, you don't swear, and they, oh, that's really interesting, or that's cool, but then there's other people that are offended mm-hmm. because I'm not swearing. Well, what does it matter if I'm swearing, what does it matter if I'm acting a certain way? Why should that affect you? Mm-hmm. But it does. It gets under their skin because they want people. This is why Christian and faithful, they're going to be imprisoned. So they're taken and they're arrested. And the reason why is because they won't buy the wares of the town. Mm-hmm. And that's the same kind of thing, you know, where these people are offended at a Christian that won't, you know, there's someone that's dating their girlfriend, but they're not sleeping together. And why? Well, because they're not married. And that's something for marriage. And that just can offend people. Well, wait a minute. This is my relationship. Mm-hmm. Why does this offend you? I'm not telling you anything about how to live your life, but you are. Because you just think you're just better than us.
You're goody two-shoes. Yeah.
And you've never said anything about their life or about how they should live like you, and yet it gets under their skin. And that's what's going on.
Mm-hmm. That's the confrontation between the two worlds that we live within. And that's what happened. I mean, and more that confrontation is becoming more and more open and public in Western countries, at least, I mean, in our context, that's happening more and more. And I think we see that more and more, where the Christian life in and of itself is an offense to the world we live within. I mean, it's always been that way. That's always the way it is. The Christian life is always an offense to darkness and to evil. It just at different times becomes more prominent of a contrast and a stark portrayal of the difference in different times. And I think we're in another one of those times where that is happening more and more. You hear it in the news more and more, that gets into politics, we don't want to go into politics. Right. You think of things that pop in your head and
Christianity is looked down upon much worse now than it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So think of what it's going to be like in 30 or 40 years. It's probably going to be worse unless there's a corrective. Mm-hmm. Of course, as good all millennialists, we understand that there's times when the church is more persecuted than other times. Mm-hmm. So in 30 years, perhaps it will come back. We don't know
We don't know how the Spirit will work in the church, and for the church to prosper, it can be persecuted or it can, you know, thrive in the sense that it's welcomed. You know, there are different stages and different times that God works. Mm-hmm. And we don't know the mind of God and how he will do work in that regard. So, I mean, it might be that it's that way here, but it's better somewhere else.
Yeah, it's true.
And might have a lot of immigration to another country instead of to this one. Who knows?
So Christian faithful, when they're taken because they wouldn't buy the wares, mm-hmm. and they have a very quick trial. This is the first trial of the story that we're given here. And they're given a very quick trial. And all they're saying is, look, just let us go. Just let us go through the city. We're almost out of here. If we're offending you by the fact that we're here, let us go. We won't offend you anymore. But that wasn't good enough, mm-hmm. because they've offended them so much that they, the town people here, believe that there should be punishment because of the amount and intensity of the offense that faithful and Christian have caused. And so they beat them, they smear dirt on them, mm-hmm. and they put them in cages. And that way they can be mocked. So they take them in the center of the fair and they put them in these cages. And that way they can walk by and mock them.
Yeah, it says, Bunyan wrote, "There, therefore, they lay for some time and were made the objects of any man's sport or malice or revenge." Revenge.
Yeah, well, right. They've been offended. The Christian and faithful harmed them by their very presence. Mm-hmm. And now they have a right to their revenge.
Yeah. And he continues, "The great one of the fair, laughing still at all that befell them. But the men being patient and not rendering railing for railing, but contrarywise blessing and giving good words for bad and kindness for injuries done. Some men in the fair that were more observing and less prejudiced than the rest began to check and blame the baser sort for their continual abuses done by them to the men." Interesting. Interesting turn there, that you have this at the result of the first trial. And, you know, praise God, and it's just a story that Bunyan portrays an accurate and helpful spiritual Christian response to persecution.
And one of the results of that is there are some men in the city that mm-hmm. start to actually have sympathy mm-hmm. for Christian faithful and start to turn on their fellow citizens to rebuke them. You know, to leave them alone is what's happening here.
Yeah, and that's good. I mean, I think lots of times when we see bad things happen to Christians, we act wrongly in our response. Mm. Or if they happen to us, we react wrongly in our response.
We can.
Yeah, I'm not saying this isn't all over the place.
Absolutely.
This isn't all over the place. But
when harm do we bless?
Yeah. When harm do we bless? Right. I mean, that's a very hard thing to do, but that is the call.
Right.
And so often my rights were violated, and that might be the case.
Right. There are times that you stand up.
We bless? Do we bless? Right. That's a really wonderful response and description that Christian gives, or Bunyan gives, of faithful and Christian's response. And I'm thankful for it.
Well, of course, Bunyan is a situation where he believes mm-hmm. he's been wronged
yeah.
and he shouldn't be in prison. And so, you know, he's saying, this is how I should be acting.
Mm-hmm.
It's not right that I'm here. It's not, I've been wronged. But my, you know, one sense, his very presence was what was offensive to some people. The law said he should have gotten a license. And we have to be subject to the laws of the land. But still, to, you know, now put him in prison for preaching the gospel, it's definitely, I mean, we wouldn't do that today. We just. And yet that's what that was happening at that time. That's their time frame. We have to be careful about judging people by our own time.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he's reminding himself, I need to be, to reply in love and charity for others.
Need to bless.
Yeah.
Need to bless. I appreciate that. Statement there. Contrary wise, blessing and giving good words for bad and kindness for injuries done. Some men in the fair that were more observing, as you mentioned here, Rob, and less prejudiced than the rest, began to check and blame the baser sort. Ah, that's good.
Yeah, it's interesting because then there's this uproar in the city, mm-hmm. another uproar,
right?
the people that were actually starting to be affected by faithful and Christian started to defend them. Well, a riot breaks out. They end up fighting and brawling in the streets. Well, Christian and faithful are blamed again.
Well, it's their fault.
It's their fault.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
they incited a riot.
Yeah, absolutely. And from prison.
Yeah. So they come, they have another trial. And after the second trial, they're found guilty of the uproar, and they're beaten severely. They're placed in iron chains, mm-hmm. and they're paraded around the city. There's like an iron bar put on them, and they're paraded around the city, and their humility was great. But then they started to make converts. A few men of the fair started to actually listen to what they had to say. They, even after the second time, mm-hmm. now there's people who are on their side. Now we don't, Bunyan really doesn't go on with give us much more detail than that. He just says that they're on their side. I don't think this is necessarily they make converts to Christianity.
Hmm.
I just think they're just going to be defending them. This is unfair. They see the unfairness of it. And these men are probably actively wanting them to be released.
Yeah, I mean, let me just we can have it in front of us. The language is here. It says, so they beat them pitifully and hanged irons upon them and led them in chains up and down the fair for an example and a terror to others, lest any should further speak in their behalf or join themselves unto them. But Christian and faithful behave themselves yet more wisely and receive the ignominy and shame that was cast upon them with so much meekness and patience that it won to their side, though but a few in comparison of the rest, several of the men in the fair. This put the other party yet into a greater rage insomuch that they concluded the death of these two men. Wherefore they threatened that the cage, nor irons, should serve their turn, but that they should die for the abuse they had done and for deluding the men of the fair.
Yeah. Yeah. They put him back in the cage for a little bit. Eventually they pull Faithful out and they stand him up. And it really does give me the idea of Stephen standing up when he stands up to face the crowd. And so Faithful's brought forward, and now they're going to have this trial again. This is the third trial of what's going on here. And although I understand that Bunyan was writing 200 years before Lewis Carroll, this is straight out of Alice in Wonderland. This trial very well could be a scene from Alice in Wonderland.
And this is where you thought the humor comes in.
Look, Bunyan, he's putting this in. I mean, and we've noticed this before, that there are times when he's really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of them. I think it's just a very funny scene. But Faithful is pulled out and they call witnesses. They're going to call witnesses against Faithful. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I was listening to this again. And as I was preparing. And what made my head turn was the introduction of the judge before we get to the witnesses and before we get to the jurors and such. Okay. And the judge is Judge Hategood.
Yeah. Yeah. That's who you want as your judge right there. That's who you want.
Judge Hategood. Yeah.
Yep. So the three witnesses that come are envy, superstition, and pickthink. And which is always trying to like smarmy kind of person, you know. It's somebody that wants these little flatteries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's who he is. He's somebody who just, you know, you just, it says flattering things and you're standing there going,
ew,
you're slimy. go away. You're really slimy. But the great thing, and this is why I find it so funny, and this again right out of Alice in Wonderland. The first witness is called, and it's Envy, and he gets up and he says, "I've known the defendant for a long time," and then the judge jumps in and he says, "Wait, swear him in." And so Envy's given testimony that he's known, which of course we know is a lie,
right?
And then he's sworn in, and it's just that's really funny. It's just the way he puts that, and then Envy goes on. After he's sworn in, you know, he doesn't go back and say anything about his first statement, but he says, he says he's known Faithful for a long time, you know, and then he gets sworn in. And although he has a good name, he is one of the vilest men in their country. He doesn't regard king or country, law or custom, and persuades others to do the same in what he calls principles of faith and holiness.
Ooh.
I know it's he's the vilest person because he teaches faith and holiness.
Mm-hmm.
That's the testimony against Faithful. I would love for that testimony
to be said of me.
Oh, absolutely. It just shows you it becomes a very comical scene. Mm-hmm. And I actually think Bunyan did this on purpose to show a comical scene because it's just so ridiculous. That Faithful is going to be brought up on charges for having offended the city.
Yeah. And in particular, he says, "I heard him once myself affirm that Christianity and the customs of our own town of vanity were diametrically opposite and could not be reconciled. By which saying, my lord, he doth at once not only condemn all our laudable doings, but us in the doing of them." Envy.
Yeah.
Lying through his teeth.
So then they bring the next witness, which is Superstition. So he comes up and Superstition is telling them that he doesn't know him. He doesn't know Faithful, but he says, and he doesn't want to know him because he's a pestilent fellow. He witnesses that Faithful said that the religion of the town was not true. The people were still in their sins, and they would all be damned. Yeah, that actually, that's true. He probably, I mean,
he thought that's
kind of the gospel.
I
mean, it's right there. He's not lying. Mm. See, the truth of the word of God, the truth of the gospel, will send us to the gallows, and it's still the truth, because the people of this world hate the gospel.
Yeah. Then Pickthank.
Yes.
What a name.
I know. He says he's known the prisoner a long time. And that he's heard him speak. I love this. He's heard him speak unspeakable things, which would seem impossible. But he's heard him speak unspeakable things against Beelzebub, Lord Old Man, Lord Carnal Delight, the Lord Luxurious, Lord Desire, Lord Desire of Vainglory, Old Lord Lechery, Sir Having Greedy, and the rest of the nobility, and even Judge Hategood, saying that the judge was an ungodly villain, to which the judge turned to Faithful and said, "Thou renegade, heretic, and traitor, hast thou heard what these honest gentlemen have witnessed against thee?" Well, now, apart from them saying that they've known him, they actually have been kind of honest. In one sense, I mean, they did hear Faithful say these things. In the gospel, mm-hmm. They are sinners. They are going, unless they, it's a little edited. There's definitely some deceit going on here. But in one sense, they're also saying that they're giving a somewhat accurate account of what Faithful has said. Now, they're twisting it.
Yeah.
But again, I just go back to the truth of the word of God and the truth of the gospel is going to be enough for people to hate us, treat us badly, imprison us, and kill us.
Yeah. Well, the hope in that regard is that that's what it is.
Yes.
And not ourselves.
Right.
That the only offense that we bring to others is the cross of Jesus Christ, is the proclamation of the gospel. If it is other things, then those are the things that we need to get rid of. If we're going to offend, it ought to be with the gospel. If I'm going to go to jail or to prison, I want to go for the gospel. I don't want to go there, but if I'm going to go, that's what I want to go for. Yeah. And for that reason alone.
Yeah. So Faithful asks to defend himself, and the judge, the judge says, "Sirrah, sirrah," which is actually how a parent talks to a child that's annoying them. Or a superior talks to an inferior that is, again, annoying them. Mm-hmm. And it's like Faithful shouldn't have a right to speak. I mean, he is so offensive that he shouldn't even be allowed to speak. But the judge does tell him that even though he should be killed immediately, he'll be allowed to speak. that's nice.
Yeah. See,
he's a benevolent hate-gooder.
Benevolent dictator.
So what happens? What is Faithful's defense?
Faithful's defense is that any rule, a law, custom, or people that are contrary to the word of God are diametrically opposite to Christianity.
Okay, that's not holding back there.
That the true worship of God can only be accomplished with divine faith. And divine faith can only come through divine revelation, which reveals to us the will of God. And as to the men that Mr. Pickthank mentioned, they are more fit for being in hell than in this town and country.
Again, not holding back.
No, he gives his reasons, three reasons. And then the judge called to the jury, who all this now, while stood by to hear and observe.
Now, the jury, as we know, are very impartial people standing by listening to all that's been said.
Well, let's just listen to hear what the judge says, right? Remember, this is Judge Hategood.
Yes, yes. Very impartial.
He's kind of like now he's heard what Faithful has said, the three reasons. Mm. And now maybe it's like the judge's instructions to a jury. You get
that? Oh, there you go.
Before the jury goes out. And this is remarkable. Gentlemen of the jury, you see this man about whom so great an uproar hath been made in this town. You have also heard what these worthy gentlemen have witnessed against him. Also you have heard his reply and confession. It lieth now in your breasts to hang him, or save his life. But yet I think meet to instruct you into our law. There was an act made in the days of Pharaoh the Great, servant to our prince, that lest those of a contrary religion should multiply and grow too strong for him, their males should be thrown into the river. There was also an act made in the days of Nebuchadnezzar the Great, another of his servants, that whoever would not fall down and worship his golden image should be thrown into a fiery furnace. There was also an act made in the days of Darius, that whoso for some time called upon any god but his should be cast into the lion's den. Now the substance of these laws this rebel has broken, not only in thought, which is not to be borne, but also in word and deed, which must therefore needs be intolerable. For that of Pharaoh, his law was made upon a supposition, to prevent mischief, no crime being yet apparent. But here is a crime apparent. For the second and third you see he disputeth against our religion, and for the treason he hath confessed, he deserveth to die the death.
Yeah, some impartial instructions there to the jury.
Impartial judgments there.
You can either have him killed or set him free, but I think you should have him killed. Pretty much what he just said. And then, of course,
then the jury goes out.
Then the jury goes out. We have a very impartial jury here. Let's poll the jury. So we have. Oh, you want to give the jury?
Shall I give it? Do you have the jury's names? You have the jury's names there. Go ahead.
So we have Mr. Blind Man, Mr. No Good, Mr. Malice, Mr. Lovelust, Mr. Live Loose, Mr. Heady, Mr. High Mind, Mr. Enmity, Mr. Liar, Mr. Cruelty, Mr. Hate Light, and Mr. Implacable. Now, Faithful is found guilty. Surprise, surprise. And he is sentenced to death. So they tortured him first. They list out how he's tortured. They put him to death. I love, I think it's Mr. Cruelty, who yells out, hanging is too good for him, or death is too good for him. I can't remember. Whatever it was, he wanted one more.
It's hanging is too good for him. Yeah. So after the section where you just read, the jury goes out and they refer to the names of the jurors. And then it says, who everyone gave in his private verdict against him among themselves, and afterwards unanimously concluded to bring him to guilty before the judge. And first Mr. Blind Man, the foreman said, I see clearly that this man is an heretic. Right? I mean, there's the humor. And then said Mr. No Good, away with such a fellow from the earth. Aye, said Mr. Malice, for I hate the very looks of him. Then said Mr. Lovelust, I could never endure him. Nor I, said Mr. Live Loose, for he would always be condemning my way. Hang him, said Mr. Heady. A sorry scrub, said Mr. High Mind. My heart riseth against him, said Mr. Enmity. He is a rogue, said Mr. Liar. Hanging him is too good for him, said Mr. Cruelty. Let's dispatch him out of the way, said Mr. Hate Light. Then said Mr. Implacable, might I have all the world given me? I could not be reconciled to him. Therefore, let us forthwith bring him in guilty of death.
Yeah, so as the British would say, that's a fair cop. So he is faithful is taken and you know they torture him to death and then they burn him, they burn him to ash, but then faithful we're told this is like an Elijah exit here, that there's a chariot, you know, flaming chariot waiting for him to take him away to the celestial city, which is where he wanted to go because now he's with the Lord. And you know, they knew, you know, Christian faithful knew going in that one or both would be killed. And Christian is taken away, or he's left. Actually, he's left because I think they take faithful out of the one of the cages and they leave Christian. And they kind of forget about him.
Yeah. And while I do think there's meant to be that ironic humor, right? And these names and the way, I mean, they have each one. Bunyan has each one with a word, which is why I read that again, or read through that. You know, the blind man saying, I see. Yeah. There is intentional humor there.
But absolutely.
Then he brings it to a place of sobriety when he comes down to the conclusion of the matter. And he says that, you know, they found him guilty and they must bring him to death. And then they're going to give him the most cruel death that could be invented. I mean, then there's this list of all of the things that are done to him, right? First scourging him, they buffeted him, they lanced his flesh with knives, they stoned him with stones, pricked him with swords, last of all, burned him to ashes at the stake. Then came faithful to his end. And there stood behind the multitude a chariot and a couple of horses waiting for Faithful, who, so soon as his adversaries had dispatched him, was taken up into it, and straightway was carried up through the clouds with sound of trumpet, the nearest way to the celestial gate. But as for Christian, he had some respite and was remanded back to prison. So I think, you know, as much as obviously I was brought to laughter in reading those, the jury's names, you're reading the jury's names, the judge, Hategood, and his instructions to the jury, and then the jury's one-liners, Bunyan brings it down to the cruel end. And there's a sense of sobriety that we're brought to, appropriately so, at the death of anyone. But especially the martyrdom of a saint, right? Mm-hmm. And there's sadness, but there's joy for Faithful because you see where he goes. You see, it's the direct line, right? It's the quickest way to the celestial gate, and that is through death. Not that we long for it, as we've talked about in a previous episode, but that when it comes, you know, we praise the Lord for that person, but there's sadness and mourning because of the loss as well.
Yeah, kind of comes to a crescendo with Faithful, and then Christian is put back in the cage, and it's almost as if you start to see the people going back to the fair life, and how that their ways, and it's almost Christian. It's like the sound of the fair itself kind of goes down, and to almost where it fades out, and you just see Christian alone, forgotten. And what we end up being told is that Christian escapes, but you don't know if they just let him go or if he picked the lock and got out. I mean, I've actually seen that in a rendition of one of the cartoons or something where he's like picking the lock and getting out. I mean, but because we don't know, he doesn't give that kind of a detail like he does with the trial and that. But it's because it's done. You know, it's that Faithful was the crescendo, and now it's going to move on into another scene. And yet, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, it's, you know, the Lord's will was that Faithful would go on. He paid the ultimate price and went on to his reward. But Christian must complete the journey.
He must continue and endure. And we're thankful that Bunyan puts even a song in about Faithful, right? Christian sings this song. He says, "Well, Faithful, thou hast faithfully professed unto thy Lord. With him thou shalt be blessed. When faithless ones with all their vain delights are crying out under their hellish plights, sing, Faithful, sing, and let thy name survive. For though they killed thee, thou art yet alive." Well, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Of course, you can find us at reformforum.org. And as you know, we are a listener-supported podcast, the Reform Forum, and all of the podcasts that you'll find here, not only Theology Simply Profound, but Christ the Center, released on Fridays, as well as Proclaiming Christ, often released on Wednesdays. You should check out all the resources there, but those resources are useful for you. Consider how you might donate and go to reformforum.org/donate. To find out more about the congregation that Rob and I serve, do go to westminsteropc.org. And if you're in the Chicagoland area and want to Check out some of the other Orthodox Presbyterian churches in the area. Go to chicagoreformed.org. Rob, what are we talking about next time?
Next time it will be Christian, Episode 4, A New Hope.
Oh, boy. Well, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Until next time.